demodulate frequency-modulated signals. With a firmware update, it could. And you're right. One of the really nice aspects of software-driven filters is you can make very, very steep filters that don't ring. Mechanical filters intrinsically, unless you're incredibly clever and can spend a lot of money on filters, will inevitably ring if you make the slope too steep.
Why is a frizz? Where did the term filter first come from?
I don't know. I would assume it predates the 20th century.
No, it's very simple. The filter characteristic resembles a woman's shirt. It's a trapezoid. It's reasonably flat on the top and has two sloped edges coming down to the edge trapezoid.
Okay, so but where does filter, filter trapezoid in French or something?
No, it's trapezoid, you know, the geometric thing. But it's called search for activity because it resembles a woman's shirt. But every filter has search, which is the slope of where it's not passing the signals or passing the signals. And it just became, as it started out as a joke, it caught on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean the upslope and the downslope. Yeah, it could be a skirt. Yeah, I see that. It's just that in the old days, everyone was kind of trained that, you can't have a zero skirt. You can't go instantaneous from full on to full off without the filter ringing like hell. And in order to correct for even slightly steep. A skirt required some clever electrical engineering design, whereas now it's just a parameter in a digital algorithm.
A vertical skirt is a theoretical impossibility.
Okay.
Which requires infinite bandwidth.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, that's why square waves have so many harmonics in them.
No, that's different. It also takes infinite bandwidth, which would be even more harmonic, to have a perfectly square wave.
Okay.
But everything that approximates a square wave has fairly the same harmonic content. It's only if you became really nuts about it, that's when the really high harmonics start building up.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of only limited by the loss in the circuits at those high frequencies. Okay, Brian, so I hope you got your question answered and such.
Some of the knowledge I gained helped, but it's still a little awkward that when you turn it clockwise, that the signal strength peaks and then decreases as you're turning the RF gain to maximum. But it is what it is, and I'll take advantage of it. Thank you.
Yeah, my suggestion is, if there's any use, excellent. If it isn't, forget about it. Don't waste your time on it.
I agree.
The radio's my ICOM 7100. Does that, if you play with the RF,
I'm jealous of you.
up and gone.
We'll say that I have the same experience with my rigs in terms of the squelch and the RF and the AF. I have the same thing. You turn down the RF, you increase the AF, you find a better signal than if you have the RF all the way up. So whatever you're describing, I can't answer why, but it happens to be a reality I experience. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a design decision of the electrical engineers putting together the components of the radio. Some of them do it one way, and some of us do it another way.
No, Roy, I was trying to tell you, I'm
sorry. Roy is right. They're doing it for cost-cutting. They save an extra pot, and over thousands and thousands and thousands of rigs, that adds up.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible. It's incredible, the economy.
You want to hear why I'm kind of jealous of you?
What?
Because I love the way you throw around all these made model numbers to the different radios you've used. Too many of the radios I've used, if I told you the made model number, no one would know what I'm talking about, because they're not the ham radio.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's not like I have a lot of radios. Most guys listening right now, I am sure, have more HF radios than I have, and more VHF, UHF radios. You know, I just got the number that I needed to use. There are guys out there, God love them, rotate through, you know, for a month, they'll rotate through radios that they have stacked up in their shacks.
I've never done that.
Yeah, I probably never will either. I'm not a collector. Well, unfortunately, it would seem that I'm a collector because, you know, I get these toys and I play with them and I run out of room. But I don't have redundancies. Usually, if I get a replacement, I get it as a replacement because the previous one has seen far better days. But I don't put together collections of computers I have my computer until it has a terminal event, and then I throw it out and I get another computer. So, some guys are collectors. You take good old Hal. He had stacks upon stacks upon stacks. I mean, most of it was the business. But still, I think if he didn't have a business, he would have stacks of radios.
Well, Hal, I remember Hal.
To know Hal is to remember Hal. He was not a forgettable character.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I was there at the Hamfest when he tried to crash it dressed sort of as a pirate.
You came to a Hamfest dressed as a pirate?
Yes, it was not a good outfit. It looked like, you know, random pieces of fabric or something. My understanding was before that time he showed up at one of the club meetings dressed up as Moses and proclaimed, "Let my people go."
Who's on this?
Well, you know, they're embedded in Limark folklore at this point. I was actually listening on the radio when he was getting interviewed and threatening a politician on the air.
Probably over his Cessna 150.
It was always part of that. I mean, you know, when you disassemble a plane and park it in your garage and your neighbors don't particularly cotton to you, that doesn't help inter-neighbor relations.
No, it wasn't in the garage. It was on the driveway. And he said, if people can park boats on the driveway, he's going to park his plane on the driveway. And that did not go over that well with the powers that be.
Well, again, unfortunately, he tended to be his worst enemy. He also decided that he wanted to put his vertical antenna out front of his house. So his neighbors not only got to see the partially disassembled Cessna in his driveway, but had this humongous vertical antenna off to the side. So he was just kind of hunting, you know, he was trolling them at one point or another.
Oh, yeah, that was how, trolling. Before the incident, I told us how it was trolling. By the way, the reason I was so impressed with the Cessna 150, do you know what a Cessna 150 is worth?
No.
A Cessna 150 in pristine condition is well over 100,000.
Well, you know, knowing how, I'm sure he got it at a bargain for dubious reasons. Because I think he got everything for dubious reasons.
Well, actually, you're off topic for 2 seconds. The big thing is, of course, an engine rebuild. With those planes, an engine rebuild is mandatory after 2,000 hours. And it's like $20,000 to $30,000. So you'll find that the sub price for a plane starts to plummet the closer it gets to 2,000 hours of major overhaul.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of items that have that problem with depreciation. I'm interested in finding out what the average depreciation of electronic vehicles is over the next, say, 10 years. Because, you know, those batteries are a big investment, and they really don't reclaim a lot of the material from them. So, you know, I've heard horror stories of guys out of warranty who couldn't afford to get their electric vehicle back into, you know, close to new shape.
Question.
Was that you, Brian? You cut off in the middle or someplace.
I was just curious, with electric vehicles, how many charge-discharge cycles do you get out of them?
That's a good question, and unfortunately, it sort of depends. Different batteries have different recharge cycles. If you fast charge them, you age them prematurely. There's a whole bunch of variables. Temperature, environment has an effect on lifespan. So, they can give it an average approximation, but ultimately it can vary significantly depending upon how much you abuse these batteries.
Some vehicle manufacturers are offering 100,000 miles on the battery.
Well, I mean, that's good. We'll have to see how that pans out. They may just end up taking the loss in order to strengthening their lineup for future. I don't know exactly, but again, it's kind of talking about apples and oranges and other things. You can't really compare one battery model environment to another. It's just too varied. But if you want to lose money up front to get a lot of people going into electric vehicles, and you got a lot of money at the bottom of your pockets, then yeah, you could do things like that. And you know, the car industry has kind of done that in the past before, and we'll do it again. Okey-doke, it looks like we puttered out, we ran out of steam there, but it is 10:17, so it's certainly time to summon Paul, WS2N, with the SpaceNet report.
AC2GS, WS2N. Yeah, thanks, Roy. Yeah, we're here every week, and name here is Paul, and this is the SpaceNet report, but that's part of the TechNet. And wanted to go through a couple of topics. One is been in the news lately where it looks like NASA is going to be having trouble getting to the moon before China. So that is a lot of talk about possibly doing, maybe putting SpaceX on the side. They're supposed to be the primary company that's going to be landing on the moon. They're going to be able to pick up the astronauts from the Artemis or Orion spacecraft orbiting the moon, and then bring them down, use it like a shuttle, use the Starship from SpaceX to go down to the moon and come back up, dock with the Orion and come back home that way. And that is way behind schedule. So that now, recently they've been talking about Blue Origin possibly coming in to help. They do have a contract to do the same thing, except for Artemis 5. You know, right now we've gone through Artemis 1. We're about to go through Artemis 2, which is just a flight around the moon with a crew and then come back to Earth. And Artemis 3 was supposed to land on the moon, and 4 was supposed to land on the moon as well, both with the Starship vehicle. But since they're behind schedule, maybe they could push up the Blue Moon lander built by Blue Origin. Now, again, that is going to take time. I mean, they have a certain schedule. They're not really going to be ready for quite a few years. Now it looks like Lockheed Martin is willing to step in. They don't have a contract with NASA.
WB-3AD with a question.
Okay, 1 second. But anyway, Lockheed does not have a contract, but they're looking to possibly get one. They have a well-designed vehicle. They could do it much less expensive than what's going on now. And yeah, we're going to have... we'd be able to, beat China to the moon if we went that way, from what I see. But that's not really the goal of the Artemis program. The Artemis program is to go to the moon and stay. Nelson, the older NASA administrator from the last administration, stressed that all the time. That's the goal, to go there and stay there. So if you're going to do that... then you might have a situation where China will get to the moon before we do. Not that it matters. We've been to the moon 6 different landings anyway. So, yeah, back over to you at WS2S.
Yeah, here's my question. As you mentioned, and we both certainly know, we've been to the moon, 55, 56 years ago? And we learned a lot. And my question is, why do we want to go back? Now, that's not a stupid question. I mean, literally, why do we want to go back? Maybe somebody has a brilliant idea that setting up a permanent station on the moon, kind of like the International Space Station, would be very useful for the following reasons. But what? The only things I've heard make no sense to me at all. And by the way, while on the subject of staying there, cosmic rays are a question that would have to be addressed. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Cosmic rays, general radiation. All the bad things that come out of the sun and the galaxy could be a problem. And they're always working on that, trying to improve the insulation, that you can use on spacecraft, like putting water in the walls. You have water tanks, and you can put them in the walls, and water is very good insulator against that type of thing. So they've got all kinds of ideas. But the reason to go to the moon, well, I can go by the reports that have been
out there for, it seems like, decades, you know, you would want to have a base for a number of reasons. First of all, you need to be capable of doing that. That the engineering behind that is overwhelming. There's, you know, so much involved, so many tonnage of materials that would have to be transported from Earth to do it. But the possibility is there. And China would love to be able to do that. And, of course, we would like to do it as well. You know, my question is, you know, why did we stop? You know, we went up to Apollo 17. There were plans all the way to go to Apollo 21, but they were all canceled. You know, the desire to go there was canceled. You know, out of six flights, we only had one scientist actually land on the moon, Harris, on Apollo 17. Everybody else, you know, from the military and all, pilots. They had future plans of other scientists eventually going to the moon. You have a base there. That is a good stepping stone, they said, to eventually go to Mars. I mean, one of the goals is to go to Mars. You need to practice a lot before you have many different missions to eventually go to Mars. The best place to practice would be the moon. That's a couple of the reasons. Outside of the, you know, mining for, you know, different rare earth materials, I mean, that's of course one of the things I've heard discussed, but you know, I don't put much value in that until, you know, maybe many decades from now. Maybe it might become useful. Back to you, Ed.
All right, thanks. But yeah, to answer, I've given some thought about stopping where we did back in 1972, I believe it was. You do have a point, but as I understand, and I was very around in those years. I think the public became bored with it, and I think they decided the scientific stuff really didn't carry the interest that the other stuff had. You know, the charm was gone, and they really didn't have the stomach to fight for the budget. They're just true academic, pure scientific research. But there were also other issues with bombardment made permit. Because, like I said, the cosmic rays are an issue. Now, we're going to the moon with the Apollo program. You know, they're outside of the Earth. Whoops, about a week or so. But long term, I think the cosmic rays would be a real problem. And remember, weight is a problem, and my shielding tends to be very heavy. And it takes an awful lot of fuel to bring it all up. And the other thing about the mining of rare earths, supposedly the moon broke off from the Earth in the, you know, early years of the solar system. So I would assume that its inner construction is pretty similar to Earth. And so I think the rare earth materials would have about the same, you know, trade as they do on Earth. So I'm not sure if that worthwhile.
With you. That's why I didn't make that much of a point of the rare earth. You know, that's in the news, you know, we're going to do a lot of mining there and all. The important mining that I would see as being valuable would be in the construction of maintaining a base on the moon.
and you really need to have water. And they know down in those dark craters on the south, especially on the south part of the moon, that, you know, if you can dig out all that ice, melt it down, now you have water. You can treat it, you can drink it, you can separate it. Now you have hydrogen, you have oxygen, you can breathe the oxygen. Or you could use the fuels for fuel cells, create your electricity out of the hydrogen and oxygen. You could take that hydrogen and use it for rocket fuel. Of course, you need O2 as well. So, I mean, if you could get enough of that stuff out of the surface of the moon, that kind of mining to me is valuable. We're looking at a very, very long time from now before anything like that happens. The lander I just talked about by Lockheed that they would like to develop, they have a nice picture of it, so I put it onto Roy's website, roy.ac2gs.com. You bring that up, and you have all of Roy's topics, many different topics that he has, and then below that you have, for this week anyway, I have two topics. This one, which has a picture of the lander, roughly what it would look like, and you notice that the engines, there would be four of them on the bottom of them, which I like, you know, four good sized engines, and they're derived from the Ohms rocket engines that were on the shuttle. Very reliable, hundreds of them have flown over the years. None of them have ever failed. In fact, that's what they're using on the Artemis service module to get to the moon. They're going to use, for now they're going to be using one of those engines. And then in the future they'll be using probably two of them. Very reliable, and they use hypergolic fuels, which means you can refuel them in space. They know they can do that. They've been doing that for decades. Russia's been doing it since the 1970s. We've done it on the International Space Station, refueling the space station itself, transferring of fuels. Very doable with hypergolic fuels, and that's one reason I like the Lockheed design, which is not, you know, they don't have a contract yet. The two companies that have contracts are SpaceX and Blue Origin. Blue Origin is Jeff Bezos, of course. SpaceX is Musk. But I'd like to see Lockheed get involved. Lockheed, the crew vehicle that will go down to the moon. Well known for the crew part of the vehicle, because Lockheed is the company that has built the successful Orion spacecraft that so far has flown around the moon once. It's going to be used next February for a crew of four to go around the moon and come back. So, these are almost like, you know, well-developed pieces of equipment that could be, you know, put together. And, if the country is, the country wants to beat China to the moon, I mean, that's the real newsmaker, and that's what, of course, drives money into the space business, like NASA, you know, having interest. If the public sees that China's going to get there first, and they do get there first, you know, a lot of interest could be lost in the space program.
What the hell is the big deal about it? We were there 56 years ago. What's the big deal? Who's the it's a race between second and third place. Big deal.
I keep saying the same thing, but, you know, we're all the, we went through that. We won the race, you know, we won the space race, you know, against Russia. Now there's a new space race. There's new generations below us that have never seen this happen. And, you know, in their mind, it's like something new. Oh, my God, China's going to get there before we do. So, you know, it's the excitement of manned space programs that have really gotten us where we are today, with the shuttles that have gone up and the space station and future commercial space stations that will be going up. We have one small version that will be going up next probably spring, called Haven, and that's it's a private little space station. You'll be able to handle four people, you know, for a week at a time or something. You know, it's a starting point for commercial space station. You know, you wouldn't have any of this stuff if you didn't have the manned space programs years ago. And to me, what's more important than anything is the robotic missions that have gone through the solar system and beyond. Those missions, I don't think would have existed without a manned space program, because you get all this money that goes into the program, and it's like momentum. And then, you know, you get organizations like Jet Propulsion Laboratory that develops all these robotic missions to the moon, to Mars, they've flown to Jupiter and Saturn with orbital spacecraft. That would not have happened if it wasn't for a manned space program. You cut the manned space program, and you know, you not only will you cut that, you'll be cutting all the important science missions that go through the solar system. Any other comments?
KF2CC.
Oh, yeah, was that you, Brian? You came through at the same time as the ID. Back to you.
Well, let the other person go. I'll come after.
I heard was the CW ID at the same time you were talking. Go ahead. Back over to you, WS2N.
Okay, I think that the only way all of this is going to really take off in the long term, is with some sort of nuclear propulsion, because chemical rockets are, chemical rockets are archaic. You're spending the amount of fuel that you're taking up there, and nuclear is the way to go, but it is also highly polluting. But if you had a rocket maybe that was a hybrid that could take you into Earth orbit, or keep you past Earth orbit, and then the nuclear engine would kick in, that would be interesting.
WD2EZ has some comments on that.
Yeah, and they've been developing that for decades. You have nuclear fission heating up other materials, and then those other materials get blown out of the back of the spacecraft. They've been working on that like for decades. But we haven't done it yet. Anyway, Ed, over to you.
Yeah, what you described is low thrust and long duration, low thrust. That would be good for interplanetary travel. But the problem is getting out away from Earth's gravity, 25,000 miles an hour. You're not doing that with nuclear technology that's now understood. As we understand it right now, nuclear energy has two applications. In bombs, huge amounts of energy are released in a microsecond. Every other application is very slow, long term. It lasts for a long time, but you're not getting anywhere remotely near the power you would need to break free the Earth's gravity. But would work fine once you're out in open space. But we're still a long way from being needing something like that.
Yeah, and actually there was a project in the 80s. They were thinking about having a nuclear rocket push off from Earth, you know. And, of course, that was canceled because, you know, the last thing you need is some kind of a problem down in the Earth atmosphere. But, you know, there's different types of... When they use the word nuclear, you know, yeah, you have nuclear bombs, then you have nuclear rockets, which, use fission to heat up materials like helium or something, and then that helium or hydrogen could actually be pushed out of the back of a spacecraft. And so, you know, you have this tremendous amount of heat heating up another fuel. So, you don't have this ignition. You don't have any kind of combustion chamber, you know, but you do have the push of the chemical going out, but, you know, what's creating the heat is, you know, fission material. That's under development. I mean, they have plans for that to eventually go to Mars. And that's the other use of nuclear. Another one that we've been using for decades is the RTG, the radioisotope thermoelectric generators. Not really being used for thrust, but to power the vehicle, to power robotic equipment. Originally taken to the moon on Apollo 12, they had one that they set up on the moon surface with an RTG. RTG take these little pellets of uranium 239. And that always gives off heat. It gives off. It's always breaking down, and as those neutrons are moving out, if you surround that with a blanket, and you know that blanket will eventually get very hot. And now incorporating that blanket, thousands of these thermo couples, you know, dissimilar metals, creating a voltage, and then take all those thousands of thermocouples and put them not only in series but in parallel, and you developed electricity. You could run equipment, could keep batteries charged, and that's exactly what they've been doing for countless vehicles. Let me drop it.
I'll pull a comment.
Like the like Perseverance and Curiosity riding around on Mars. We have they're being run by RTGs, radioisotope thermoelectric generators. And then there's of course the Hall effect ion rockets too. And I think you mentioned that Ed, we turn them on and you just don't shut them off, and you just, you know, keep gaining speed as time goes on. Again, they've been in use for many years now, a couple of decades, I guess. Ed, over to you.
Yeah, the radioactive thermal generators are mandatory once you get out past Mars. Your sunlight just don't have enough to run solar cells. But they're fairly low power. They work reliably. They will last for decades and decades. But they don't put out more than about a kilowatt in what we're using now. And compare that for what you need to get off the Earth is, it's amazingly tiny.
Yeah, each one is 109. Voyager had three on them, each Voyager. Perseverance has one, so does Curiosity. And they work quite well. You know, you could let it run for a long time on and charge the 40-amp batteries that are on the rover. You could leave the rover sit there a couple of days, charge the batteries. You know, and if you really want to do a lot of heavy work, you could do that for quite a few hours. And those things have been going well. Curiosity has been riding on Mars since 2012, you know. Perseverance has got like almost 5 years to its name now. Yeah, and they beat out the solar ones. All those solar ones did good. Spirit did 6 years. Opportunity, that made 14 years. Unbelievable. Anyway. Yeah, I just want to mention one other thing before I get to any later. Also on Roy's webpage, I put another picture of the HTV that went up to the International Space Station. HTV-X, it's a cargo vehicle developed by Japan that is, you know, successfully launched from Japan. Talked about it last week or the week before. Successfully launched last week and has docked with the International Space Station. The new version of that cargo vehicle. So that was successful. And I put a picture of what that actually looks like in space. Anyway, any other comments? WS Talk.
Brian.
Yeah, Brian, go ahead.
Oh, all good information as usual. And I want to thank you, and my eyes are closing, so I'm going to be going QRT. I thank everyone, and I thank you and Roy for doing what you do, and I shall speak to you both next week. So this is KFQCC, Clear 73.
Thanks for joining us, Brian. 73, we'll catch you next time. And, I don't have much more to add, so nobody has any comments, but, you know, I'd like to close early as well. But I'll stand by.
WBXO with a comment.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think one of the problems with what the administration is doing now is they're obviously gung-ho to beat the Chinese, and they seem to have canceled, I think just about all the education projects, as you've mentioned in the past. Most of the science missions, to put everything into the crude, as they call it now, CREWED, not CRUDE, so you have to wonder sometimes, a lunar mission. The problem is, and I think you alluded to this, I wasn't clear, is that without the basic science, you can't, you don't have the basis for a successful flight program. Because where do you learn everything for what at least used to be called manned spaceflight to succeed? You need the basic science. You need the technology. So, you know, I think they're setting up the program for failure. I'm sure it's no surprise to you that these folks just don't know what the heck they're doing. go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I agree. You know, hopefully, as time goes on, you know, they'll get their act together. You know, spaceflight has been going on for decades, and it's going to be going on for decades more. So, you know, they have a slump here and there. And this is definitely going to be, this is definitely one of them. I mean, they've cut back on the funding. NASA got up to almost $25 billion a year. Now, this next time, next year, they're going to be cut by $9 billion, you know. Yeah, they're going to keep the manned space program going, but, you know, what about the science projects? That, to me, is the most important thing. You want to be where you are with the manned space program, like you said, without the science. It's bizarre. You know, it sounds like reality TV is really caught the interest of the administration. That doesn't work for me. Anyway, I was going to sign early, unless somebody has any last comments. Frank, over to you.
There's just no way you can do a manned program without the basic science to back it up. Yeah, the basic science isn't important in its own right, but you also need the basic science research to develop what you need to do the manned program. You know, the whether it's the life support systems or the analytical systems, the computers, whatever. You know, you need the whole package. And yeah, this is kind of a reality TV administration. You know, we're seeing the same thing in the Defense Department. It's all fizzle, no stakes. And nothing's going to change until this crowd is kicked out one way or other. I mean, that's my opinion anyway. I know other people have other opinions, and that's fine. But I just don't see any way anything's going to change, you know, until, you know, a new administration gets in one way or other. Anyway, back to you to close out the net, your B2BX, so.
Yeah, I concur. You know, look what happens. You know, I mean, think back. I know I've talked about this before. You take the Discover mission that's in orbit around the sun, sending great science back to Earth. That satellite was actually called Triana. It was canceled back around 2000 or so. Because it's going to study the climate, you know. They're worried about, you know, they weren't worried about global warming back. Oh, no, we don't have to worry about that. Let's mothball this thing. They did. They put it into a building somewhere and stayed there for who knows how long until another administration came along and they resurrected it and became the Discover. Anyway, thanks for anybody that listened here. Let me sign. We'll be back next week. It's a little early, but all right. I ran out of topics. Over to you, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N for the SpaceNet Report.
Okie doke.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. You know, unfortunately, I don't foresee any particularly great NASA-related stories in the next few years. We just have to kind of deal with it if we can. And the rest to be discussed, you know, at 3 o'clock when the net repeater has the political net. Anyway, as per always, I like to leave you with the clever sayings of some clever people. Our own Dick, KTRW, always would tell people to be kind to each other at the end of the technical net, and that certainly is good advice. I always like to add good old Epictetus's, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows, so try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brain falls out or you know, you become an anti-vaxxer or something. Anyway, stay safe, be well. Thank you. Please come back next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. This is AZ2GS, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
Time complete. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Primark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.